Good evening, everyone. We're just waiting for a few more people to get joined into the room.
Hello.
All right.
How is everybody?
Good. Thanks for asking, James.
Anything exciting going on? No? All right. Are we going to bring the meeting to order, or do we have enough people on yet, or are we waiting on folks?
We have 12 on so far, so I think you can go ahead and get started at this point.
Well, real quickly, can you hear me? This is Michael Bell.
I can hear you.
I can't get video.
Neither can I. This is Teresa.
If you're calling from your phone, you won't be able to get video.
I know that.
Let me see.
Yeah, I'm calling. I'm on my laptop.
I'm showing that you have video capability, but it's possible that you do you have a camera on your laptop?
I do.
Then I'm not sure, because I'm showing that you should be able to see or be on screen, but it says that there's no camera is what I'm showing.
Is there a video presentation we're going to be exposed to? I mean, I'm on my phone. This is Pat DeLapp.
There will be information that we show during the meeting, but it will be available after the meeting on the CAC website.
Okay. That'll work for me.
Okay.
I do have a question. Why can't this information be sent out ahead of time so the ones that are on the phone can follow with you guys?
We can start doing that. We did send the agenda out. I know there's a few that will be doing possible presentations tonight. I didn't have that information beforehand, but, yes, we can definitely start doing that in the future, Teresa. This is a new process for all of us. So, I think that's a great suggestion.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I believe if you're ready to start, yeah, we can go ahead.
Sure thing.
To interrupt you, James. If everyone who is not talking, if you could please put yourself on mute. That cuts out any background noise and also allows us to be able to hear the speaker a little bit better. Thank you.
Okay, so since you just said that, LaToya, I think the first thing was the verbal roll call. How about anybody that's on their computer that can type in the chat present, just type that in, and we'll know if at least the people that are on computers can do it that way, and then that way we have less people on mute. Okay, so far we have Margo, we have Sarah, we have Corey, we have Marilyn from Housing and Credit Council, and myself. And that is everyone that is on the computer. We will stop and then let me that's on the phone say their name and where they are. Oh, Debbie DuBois from Old Town, and Monique.
Okay, you want it on the phone? This is Pat DeLapp from Tennessee Town.
Teresa Miller, North Topeka West.
And Mr. Trout from the city manager is here. All right, we're going to count that as roll call. And Michael Bell as well. Pertinent updates to the council. So a little bit of an update that I'd like to share with everyone is Margo and Susan with Valley Park and I met last week and just to have a little bit of a discussion, trying to find some tools that may be able to help not only our NIAs, but possibly the city be able to keep some metrics. And Susan found a really, really, it looks like a really good software program. We're supposed to be meeting with Mr. Fiander and Ms. Glade sometime next week, I think. Now we were trying to do it tomorrow, but there's already some plans to see if the city thinks that maybe like this could work. I don't know. Are you guys very familiar with there's business software? It's called Topper now. But basically what it does is it kind of plots a journey like sale. It starts with like the point of contact and it goes all the way through the end of the sale. And there's different steps in there. And it kind of tells you like when you should be contacting people back and, you know, at what point you should be expecting to have, you know, money down or what point product should be finished and things like that. This software does that sort of thing with projects, with projects and with neighborhood planning. Hopefully this is something that we might be able to use in the future. And this is something that Susan found, and it's going to be, hopefully it's going to be as cool as you think. Does anybody have any questions about that?
Yeah, the program's name is Copper. What does it cost? And isn't this something, if you've gone through, have a management degree anyways, you should know?
So this particular product is not called, this is not Copper. It is like a software that I've used before called Copper that was for sales. This is for planning and putting metrics on projects that the cities do and the NIAs want to do. I have a presentation that they're going to be sharing with us to see if there's any, to see if what we'll find out.
It keeps cutting out.
I think we still have people who are unmuted, but it may be his computer. James, we can't hear you.
Now, can you hear me now? No.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, then, all right, so this particular program is not called copper. Copper is something that I used at a previous job. This, hold on, I'm trying, let me get this pulled up so I can find out exactly what it's called. All right, I'm so sorry, you guys. I'm trying to go through 10,000 emails, last one. It is called Insight Formation. And I can tell you that the purpose of this is to help plan city and neighborhood projects. This type of thing can be used like when we're putting together SORT grants or any other types of grants. It can be used that way on a neighborhood level. It can be used on the neighborhood level. Let's say you get a SORT grant and it timetables in, and it gives the neighborhood and the city a timetable to help follow on when things should be done. It's really a great organizing tool. And it can also be used for citywide planning as well. So hopefully this is something that both the city and the NIAs can use. If not this particular one, something like it. We will find out. We have a demonstration sometime next week, I believe. And we will find out some different costs and whatnot that are associated with this.
I have an older computer, so my computer right off will not probably be compatible. So I'm hoping we're not going to have to pay to use this.
This would not be something that individual NIAs or individual citizens would have to pay for. If the city decides to go this route, then it would be something that the city would pay for and grant us access to.
Okay, thank you.
Who wants this? Is the Bill Finder's office wanting something? I mean, I can't believe the city does, of the millions of dollars we spend on IT, we don't have a comparable program already.
Well, this looks like something that could be used by multiple departments as well as the citizenry. So, you know, maybe Bill Finder can use it. Maybe Monique can use it. And RCAC can use it. There'd be other departments in the city that could use it. Until we are able to get the presentation from them, we don't know all of the capabilities of this software yet. And we don't know the cost associated with it yet. This is something that I'm letting you guys, hold on. This is something that I'm letting everybody know ahead of time, because this is something that a fellow CAC member came up with and researched, and we thought it would be a good idea to get a presentation about it. Any money, but any little tool that we to make our neighborhoods better helps us. So,
I do have a question, though. It is usually unusual for just two or three different people out of an NIA, different NIAs to meet out of the CAC meetings, because actually all people should have been invited to that special meeting you had. We need to be careful about having just a few people meeting at these special little meetings, because if we actually had decent Robert's Rules of Orders and our bylaws done like they should have been, that wouldn't have happened. I just want to let you know that.
Well, you're kind of right. Isn't that a violation of Kansas open meetings law?
Yes, it is.
So, okay. You guys, so there's a problem with a couple of people getting together and discussing something to bring to the table for the whole group. Am I understanding that correctly?
That is correct. City council can't meet and talk about stuff with more than you can. I think you can with one other person, but not more than one.
Okay, duly noted.
You're welcome.
I will look into that as well. So the second pertinent update for everyone is that Dawn Downing, who was our co-chair, has stepped down. She is no longer a part of the CAC, and she is also no longer a. Any questions, comments, or concerns?
Well, okay. James, I heard the first part of that, and I think I know what happened with Dawn. I didn't hear the last part of your comments. I'm sorry.
She has stepped down from her CAC. As she right. has also stepped down from her role in her NIA.
Right.
So she is completely stepped away. It's not my business to tell her business.
Right.
But I do need to let everybody know that she will not any longer be involved in the CAC, at least this year.
Right.
Thank you for that information.
And LaToya, Operation Fear update.
Okay, thank you, James. Hold on just a second. Let me bring my camera back. Got too many things going on here. Okay, so real briefly, Operation Food Secure. Those of you that have computers, can you all see the Operation Food Secure flyer?
Yes.
Okay. So just to give an update, this is some information that I sent out to everyone earlier today. The Division of Community Engagement has basically put together some pop-up site events. We work with the Topeka Rescue Mission to identify areas in our community where there either were no Operation Food Secure sites or where there may have been one or one getting ready to start. And so we are having a couple of events, one in each of the 11 neighborhoods identified here, and for September and October. And so that was information that we sent out to, or that I sent out to all of you earlier today, just kind of letting you know where those pop-up events are going to be. We're still looking for, some additional volunteers. So if any of you on the CAC are interested, I know a few of you have reached out to me already. So if there are others of you that are interested, please get in contact with me. So we can get you scheduled as a volunteer for those events. Ideally, we are doing the pop-up events to kind of show just our support for the neighborhoods and that there is definitely a need, especially with everything that's going on in our country and our community right now. There's definitely been an increase in food insecurity. And so this is something that we are doing with the hopes that we'll have either neighborhood leaders or other organizations that may step forward in those neighborhoods or areas that want to take on that Operation Food Secure site long-term. So I'm not gonna go over the entire list. You guys have seen this flyer, and if you haven't, you should have it in your emails. If for some reason you don't, you can reach out to me and I'll be sure to send that out to you again. But just basically through the months of September and October, we will be in roughly three neighborhoods, three evenings a week from 6 to 8 p.m. doing Operation Food Secure food distribution to our neighbors in need. So any questions about that?
Well, I did have a comment, and I know Sarah's on our call, and at our Tennessee Town NIA Zoom meeting last week, we discussed the schedule. Mm-hmm. And looking at October, that looks fine for Tennessee Town, but the September 14th date is also the date for our NIA meeting, and we start at 6:30. Mm-hmm. And so there could be a potential conflict there. I see that all events are scheduled from 6 to 8 p.m.
Yes. We've done that because currently Operation Food Secure doesn't have any evening sites. And we also had to schedule the events around times that staff is available to be there at those events. So any conflicts or anything was not done intentionally. It was just more of a matter of logistically how we could fit all 11 of these neighborhoods into that. So, you know, if it's something where you guys can't volunteer that night, we certainly, you know, we certainly understand. But if you can make it out the October date, that's perfectly fine as well. We're not necessarily expecting the neighborhoods to take on the site coordinator role of these pop-up events. It's more if that's something long-term down the road that you want to take on, or I know some of you have already started some Operation Food Secure sites. So that's really the intention with that.
Okay.
Anything else before we move on? Okay. James, I'll turn it over to you.
Go ahead, LaToya.
All right, the guest speaker today, Topeka Financial Navigators Program, Marilyn. Marilyn, take it away.
Thank you very much. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Good, good. Just wanted to make sure. Thank you for having me or letting me join your meeting this evening. I think most of you are familiar with Housing and Credit Counseling, Inc., of course, located at 12th and Buchanan there. We're down for one of the, our building is down for one of those food sites. So thank you, LaToya, and all the neighborhoods for helping coordinate all of that. I think you all know our mission is to counsel and educate all people to achieve their housing and financial goals. And you know, we provide one-on-one counseling and group education classes, which of course has changed to Zoom during the COVID period here. But our counseling, we continue to provide by telephone or by Zoom, not taking in-person appointments at this time, just for everyone's safety. And I think you're all familiar, we do budgeting, credit reports. We do provide a mortgage default or foreclosure prevention counseling. We help people with student loan repayment, our tenant and landlord counseling as well. And then home ownership. I know all of the neighborhoods like to hear about the home ownership. Of course, we work with the City of Topeka for the TOTO program. Beyond the TOTO program, we still have down payment assistance to buy houses as well. It averages about $4,000 a unit. So we need to spend those down. We have about 25 units we've got to use before the end of the year. So please send people our way for that if you know of people. Meanwhile, what I'm here to talk about tonight is an exciting new program, and it's an exact fit for housing and credit counseling. So thank you, Brent Trout and Monique, for helping connect us to this service that we can now begin providing for the City of Topeka. So soon you will all receive some marketing materials. It's called the Topeka Financial Navigator Program. It's a service to help residents in Topeka to tackle COVID-19 financial challenges. As you know, financial distress is a primary part of the COVID-19 crisis. So we are in partnership, not only City of Topeka and Housing and Credit Counseling, Inc., through a national nonprofit called Cities for Financial Empowerment, the CFE Fund. They have provided us excellent, not only grant resources, the funding to be able to provide this service, but also training, all the logistics involved with it. So it's very, very smooth process for us to launch quickly. Now, what a financial navigator is one-on-one triage for people with their personal financial issues. We'll help them identify immediate action steps that they can take to include managing their expenses, maximizing their income, but especially referrals to other organizations in Topeka, those such as basic needs, such as food, utility assistance, rent, mortgage assistance. And then all things are somehow usually related to something financial. So we'll help get people to the right places at the time when they need it. So basically the grant covers for 1.5 financial navigators for the entire City of Topeka. So I feel good about that. Our soft launch date for the program to begin is September the 14th. So just around the corner, that's our soft launch. And then our full launch will be September 21st. And what will happen is it's generally a call out kind of service. People will be asked to complete an online interest form, and that form would then come to us, and then we call them and provide the service. We know that can be a barrier for people. So we have gotten permission to go ahead and do a verbal authorization for those people who do not have internet access or maybe struggle with it, completing an online form. We'll meet people where they are, try to take away those barriers. So it will be a remote service, nothing in person. It'll all be by phone. The link is established where people would go online. It's finnav.org/Topeka. Or we have a phone number established as well. So a couple of things to point out. The Cities for Financial Empowerment Fund has received the funding for this project, supported by Bloomberg Philanthropies, the City Foundation, JP Morgan Chase & Company, and Wells Fargo Foundation. So we are one of several cities to be able to get this going. I really, really look forward to this service, starting with Topeka, to try to help people get to the right places financially. Each call should take about a half an hour each. So I think that's in a very, very small nutshell, besides pointing out, again, the marketing information will be out just before the soft launch and then fully for the full launch. I don't know if anyone has questions. Monique is our city lead on this project. So I know she's on this call as well, if she wants to add anything that I might have missed.
I think actually, Marilyn, you covered everything. Just to give you some ideas in regards to the marketing that we're going to do, the grant we received was for $80,000. The majority of that will be utilized for Marilyn's two navigators. And then we have a portion of that grant that we're going to utilize for marketing. And so we have been able to establish this marketing plan where there will be a mailer that will go out to all NIA households. We will have infographics, social media posts. We will have standing banners at various locations. We will have other marketing tools, silicone wristbands, and other things that you'll be able to utilize for those of you that are still having meetings. So we're excited about it. HCCI is always a wonderful partner, and there's no one else that we would have partnered with to do this in the community. And so we're excited to be able to help our neighbors in need. But please keep in mind that the program's only for 1 year. So hopefully there'll be other funding that will be captured or identified in the near future to extend it. But for right now, it's only for 1 year. Thanks, Marilyn.
Thank you. And special thanks also to Brent Bopp, actually working late one night to apply for this grant application. It's not every day that you find a city manager that will go above and beyond to make that kind of thing possible for the city of Topeka. So thank you, Mr. Calvin.
You're welcome. It's a good program. Looking forward to seeing it go.
Does anyone have any questions for Marilyn? Phone once, phone twice. All right, we're gonna move to our next guest speaker, Mr. Fiander.
Good evening, thanks James. A pleasure to share the evening with you all. And for those who can view the screen, I'll probably be sharing my screen. For those who can't, I do have a web site that has all of this information. So I'm hoping one way or the other, if not during the next few minutes of my presentation, everyone can have access to what I'm talking about, either during the presentation or afterwards. If you do want to follow along on any of these items, or right now, they're actually on the Neighborhood Relations Department webpage. There's a housing study page that is at the bottom of the left-hand side of that of the department page that had been set up, and it's the housing market study. So everything I'm talking about is on there tonight, in case I forget to mention that again. And I also can send out the link to everybody here through LaToya afterwards. So I don't want everybody to feel like the information cannot be accessed. So with that said, let's see here. I'll go to this right now. So for those of you who have had who have been on the CIC, you should have, at least this year, you should have had a presentation or two. I think the last one on the housing study with you was by Development Strategies in either May or June or July. I'll be honest, my memory is not recalling the exact date, but this summer or late spring. Since then, the study, for those of you who don't know, was presented to City Council. It was adopted with a condition. That condition is that we they directed City Manager Trout to develop a implementation plan over the next 120 days that would kind of kickstart implementation of the study. And so what I've been charged with doing is gathering and coordinating that effort. And so that's what I wanted to go over tonight, kind of give you where we're at with that and offer an opportunity to have your input on any of this. So what I've put up in front of you on the screen, for those you can see, is a page out of the housing study. It's a prioritization timeline. And it kind of set the stage for a lot of the discussion that we had with our steering committee a couple weeks ago. We have four CAC representatives, I believe, on that large committee. And which I think are all on tonight, James, Susan, Margo, and Michael. So they were part of the meeting. And what our charge is in the, like I said, in the next 120 days, which is by November, is to report back to council with this implementation plan. And the scope is a one-year implementation. So what are the actions? What are the steps? Who's going to do those steps? When are they going to do them? And what are they for 2021? So for the next year. And so we started by looking at this timeline of priorities coming out of the plan, and we just looked at the short-term priorities. So that's within the first to third year. It was recommended the top four priorities included establishing the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, or activating it, capitalizing it and activating it, expanding a weatherization program, establishing a strategic land bank, and establishing a community development corporation. Those were the top four priorities. But there were at least 20 plus tactics that the study had recommended that the group looked at. Okay, of those, which are being recommended in the short term, which ones do we think could be activated in 2021? And these would be programs, these could be new things, new tactics, they could be or expanded tactics. We don't necessarily include anything that is just a continuation of something that we already do. But if you are expanding that effort, such as weatherization, we already have some weatherization programs in place through community action, but we are proposing to expand the amount of weatherization, for instance, the number of units, the number of households that would be impacted. So that's the type of thing we're looking at. If it's just a continuation of an existing program, that's great. We need to keep doing the things we're doing well and do them better, but we're focus mostly on what new and how can we expand the affordable housing ecosystem. So let's from that prioritization timeline, the group And let me go to another one of my, let's see here. Go back to, here we go. So the group select, and by the way, I'll share this web page at the end. I have it pulled up just so I don't forget. So the group came up with a list of seven tactics that we wanted to prioritize for 2021 as either activating or planning to activate. And so I'll read those. So there's two tiers. One is a tier A, which are things we think we can activate in the first year, or one, two, or already. That's the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, weatherization, a second chance tenancy program, aging in place, and rehab assistance. A lot of talk there about helping, doing more self-help training and technical assistance so folks can have a chance to rehab their homes. And then, so that was the first tier, tier A. The second tier had two things, and this tier B are things that we don't know if they're ready to activate in 2021, but so we need to plan more and work towards activating them, if not in 2021, at a future date after that. So those two things are land, establishing a land bank, excuse me, and downtown housing. And then there were two other things that we talked about. One is establishing some overall metrics, some measures and targets to know for each of those, as well as our overall housing implementation. How do we know what success looks like? How many units are we targeting to for affordability, et cetera, home ownership, et cetera. So that's, you got a group looking at that. And then this, another really neat thing that Michael brought up was, and I'm calling it housing stories, but some way to personalize all this stuff that we're talking about, you know, put some faces on it. How does this affect people, and what are their stories, and how is this going to help people? And if we can get those stories out, I think we can have a better impact on actually expanding our resources and having folks understand just how necessary the housing tactics are that we're looking at to help those who are most vulnerable in our neighborhoods. So those were the overall tactics for 2021, the overall priorities that we want to kind of peel off and have subgroups take a look at those and come back. And I gave them an assignment, and I'm kind of give you the assignment as well. Is what we want to do is we have to meet by, we are meeting at the end of September again. And when we meet then, we want to have a review of actions. The actions, and actually, let me pull this one. I think I can pull this up here. So here's an example. So we want people to, and these subgroups to talk and propose what are the steps, what are the actions that we need to take to, for instance, in this case, activate our Affordable Housing Trust Fund. We want to be, you know, it's one thing to say, hey, we need that. It's another thing to really put those steps together, and who is going to lead those steps, who's going to support, when are those going to happen, and then probably overall metrics, what, you know, number of rental units or homeowner units or the types of units that we are talking about What are those numbers and targets look like? And so we want to do that for each of the priorities, weatherization, second chance tenancy, aging in place, and then the rehab assistance. And then come back as a group and talk through those and present those to the group, get feedback and kind of begin to put the meat on this framework. If you've ever done an action plan, if you've ever been involved with any of that, this doesn't need to be overly complicated. It's really just asking people to think through those steps and actually probably more importantly, who. I think you've heard this when the housing study was being presented, but it really takes a village here. The city cannot do this all. In fact, that was a huge message that came out of this is, you know, we have existing resources they commended the programs that were in place. So it's not a program issue, it's a capacity issue. We have to expand our resources and ways of helping keep units affordable and creating new units that are affordable. And so that's tier A. And then tier B, of course, we had for land banking and downtown housing. These are all on the web page that I was talking about. And I think I can bring that up now and let people see that. So everything that I just talked is on the old neighborhood relations webpage, which we're trying to get moved over, but citywide housing market study and strategy under the implementation plan. We also have the video from the first meeting. We have the video comments. We have minutes. So any information you're looking at should be there. So at this point, I will stop I'll stop there and see if anybody else from the committee or anybody else would like to comment on anything I missed or questions.
This is Teresa Miller. I have a question for you. Explain what you mean by downtown housing.
Teresa, downtown housing is so that's one of the recommendations, and I'm going to not get the words right, but it's basically from the housing study was to market and get some development going for housing downtown. Downtown had a market study done before this housing study that said there should be at least 900 more units in downtown than in the next 10 years than we currently have. We are way behind in terms of a city in our downtown in terms of our residential investment. Most other cities are experiencing now. So we're underperforming there, and it's the one segment of the market that was deemed as a growth area for our housing units in Topeka, much like it has been with other cities. So downtown could be, you know, and this may be what some of your question is, we're actually doing a downtown plan right now, and we're trying to figure out where do those 900 units, where could they go? Well, I'm going to tell you, a lot of the office buildings downtown, we could look at those for conversion. Our rental rates don't really support new construction yet without some subsidy, some major subsidy, the NRP, TIF, land. things like that to help. But we have an overall physical plan that we're putting together for downtown. But I also would add to that, there are adjacent neighborhoods to downtown. So for instance, Old Town or Ward Mead or East Topeka, North Topeka, that are part, are on the edge of downtown, that also could be what I would call downtown housing. Because I think, as I had this talk earlier today with Michael in a conversation, is, you know, we don't have enough demand, even for down, we don't have enough demand to support investment in every square inch of our city, let alone downtown. And so what we were trying to do is take something that is, the data shows there is a major demand. If we can move that forward, there is a demand there that can be tapped, but can we do it to help what I would say be like a ripple effect, either changing that perception of downtown, which will help the adjacent neighborhoods, but also could you do some developments, improvements that would help both downtown and those adjacent neighborhoods as well. Because I think we are, those neighborhoods, like it or not, in downtown often get lumped together. And so they really have an interwoven sort of destiny, if you will, that if we do good in one, that helps the other. And it's there's a symbiotic relationship that that we need to take kind of tap into and take advantage of. So that's a long answer. That's a long response for what is downtown housing.
Right. My question is, I know there's some type of rules. What I'm my concern is, I don't mind helping Monroe, Old Town, and people like that. But when it comes to when you've got those lofts and all that stuff, this, our money is not to be spent on helping those realtors fix up lofts with this kind of money. That's my main concern. I don't want somebody in there that's a realtor apply for money to fix their lofts so they could make income off of it.
Yeah, thank you for making that point. What I probably didn't clarify is, when I talk about downtown, I'm talking those 900 units that I mentioned, those are all market rate units. And so any of the funding that were, say, would come through the Affordable Housing Trust Fund or come through the city's allocations, you know, you can't use that for market rate. It has to be targeted towards on the low moderate income benefit, but that being said, you could have a market rate workforce housing, and workforce housing is 60% to 120% LMI. We have a development being proposed right now to convert the old Ramada Hotel to 140 units of workforce housing that will definitely benefit a target segment of that is in need, you know, workers that service workers and others that are not able to make or afford the sort of rents that a new construction product would have. And so the Casson, there's a project proposed by Pioneer at 6th and Topeka, the Casson building. It's actually technically in Old Town, but it's going to benefit downtown and Old Town together. That's looked at as workforce housing. There's also some units that'll be set aside for less than 60% as well. So I agree. What you're looking for in parts of downtown would be a totally different product than probably what we would be doing with the affordable housing funds in other parts of downtown or the adjacent neighborhoods.
Okay, thank you.
Bill, Pat DeLapp here.
Hi, Pat.
Hey, a couple things I wanted to bring out is I through a letter sent to council, things like this. We should be bringing in things like the 50-50 HUD program, where firefighters, police, and teachers get half off on the list price of houses HUD has taken back. We should bring back or bring in a program, which you never had, Title I loans. It's not based upon your equity in the house at all. It's based upon your ability to repay the loan, to help people do it. And there's many other things, but one of the things that is kind of like a thorn in my paw, staff was unaware of it a couple of years ago. We've got all these nonprofits, well, not all of them. Many of them are using our tax dollars to build houses, things like this, Cornerstone and Community Action to be specifically, and all they do is take the houses off the tax rolls. Why are we reducing our tax bases? Part of this program should be that start making them pay. If they want our tax dollars, you gotta pay property taxes. They use services, they should pay for the services.
Yeah, I hear you. That's a great example of, you know, you want to provide and match that need for affordability. And at the same time, you want to put the properties back on the tax rolls, which helps the rest of the community. So I agree. I mean, I don't know that that's the case in all of our nonprofits. When they take possession, and I know Habitat, for instance, turns it over, you know, to the homeowner, and that didn't always used to be that way. And so now you are paying, you do have that back on the tax rolls. But the other programs you talked about, Pat, there are other people that are much smarter than me that are in our department that I will look to advise on the 50-50 and the Title I loans. But yeah, I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Bill, this is Mike Bell, and I just wanted to thank both you and Dan Warner for talking to me this afternoon specifically about downtown housing and being willing to expand the view both geographically and conceptually of what downtown housing is or should be to include the downtown adjacent NIAs. And again, national trends show, and I don't know if this is true in Topeka, or to what degree it might be true, but people are moving back to city centers. And so those neighborhoods then I think provide fertile ground for opportunities like the one you cited with the Kaysen building at 6th and Topeka, potential with the old Van Buren School down near 17th and Harrison. We also talked this afternoon maybe about looking, you know, just kind of brainstorming at this point, maybe East Topeka Junior High, and maybe doing some things over there. So I like expanding that to include those neighborhoods.
Yeah, I you know, I told you this. I mean, we're definitely tracking that downtown term is a broader term in my mind for our purposes in this housing study than probably what it is for my planners who are doing the physical plan for downtown. So I do appreciate you were more eloquent in the last 30 seconds and said what I probably should have said than I did in the last 5 minutes. So yes, people are moving back downtown. That is a fact. It is a demographic that we have not tapped into as much, but we've set ourselves up to do it. We've primed the pump for downtown. We've put a lot of investment in. that we have the ability to do more than what we have seen with housing. So, anytime we can benefit both downtown and the adjacent neighborhoods. And quite honestly, I think they're tied together. So, what's good for one is going to help the other.
And then as a factoid, maybe to that discussion, downtown is surrounded by NIAs. Even if you jump the river, you've got North Topeka NIAs, you've got Oakland, you've got the East Topeka NIAs, you've got Monroe, you've got the Central Topeka NIAs that surround downtown. And so, you know, again, conceptually and geographically, it does make sense.
Yeah, and I told you this too. It really makes me hot under the collar whenever there's bad news that comes out in the press and they say such and such happened downtown, and it's you know like I made the comment, all the neighborhoods kind of get lumped in together when we talk about downtown, and these things that happen may not be. It's like saying something happened in East Topeka. Well, I mean, that's a big area. What is that? So anytime we can have a chance to change people's perception of a downtown, I think that's going to be, people are moving downtown. Oh, did you see this happen? You know, that's only can have that ripple effects beyond the technical borders as well.
Thanks, Bill.
Sure. Thank you again, Michael. If there's anything else, I just want to make sure folks have a chance to view all the information. If you want to take a shot at giving us some input or giving your fellow CAC members any input that they can bring back to the committee. If you're interested in any of those topics that I mentioned, any of those tactics, for instance, you know, second chance tenancy, for instance, Marilyn that was just on here, Teresa Baker with HCCI is going to help lead discussion on that group. So if you have an interest, let me know. We'll connect you with all that information.
Thanks, Bill.
Okay, thank you. And hopefully you'll have me back next month as well. I'll update you again.
Thank you, Mr. Finder. LaToya, can we get your screen back up, please?
Yes.
Thank you. All right. So now we are looking at the 2021 SORT neighborhood selection process.
Yes. So
let's get to it, I guess.
Okay. So, James, there's a couple of things, let me address the group. There's a couple of important dates first that I want to point out to everyone. So due to COVID this year, we've actually pushed back the timeline for when all of this takes place. The SORT applications are now due this Friday, September 4th. And then the scoring process will actually take place sometime during next week up to the week before our next CAC meeting, October 7th. And then the selected neighborhood will be announced at the October 7th meeting. There will be a presentation on the CAC's recommended selected neighborhood to the City Council on November 10th. So I just wanted to get those dates out of the way first and foremost. The second thing that I want to say is that this year is going to be a very different year in terms of the way that we process the scoring process and the applications. So I am going to provide a couple of options with COVID and everything. So the first option will be I will email copies of the applications to all of the CAC members, and we will have an electronic scoring sheet set up by next week for those of you that can complete it that way. There will be a lot more time in terms of the turnaround for getting that done. The other option would be for those of you that would prefer to do the paper copy is we can mail a packet to you, but you'll have to have it returned that week before October 7th in order for us to count up all the scores. And then I will also, in between that time, need two additional members from the CAC who would be able to meet with me to review the scores for the application so that we can make that presentation at the next CAC meeting. So before I jump into the application and the score sheet, does anybody have any questions over what I just said? Okay. Seeing that we have none so far, I'm going to go on to the SORT program application.
I just got unmuted. I called in a long time earlier and you guys left me on mute. I just now got unmuted, so I wasn't able to participate earlier.
Okay.
Hello, anybody acknowledging that?
And who is this speaking?
Donald Fortin.
Okay. Did you have a question over the SORT application or anything that I just
My question is, why was I left on mute for all of this time until just now?
Let me answer that. When you first call in, it will tell you how to unmute yourself or to mute yourself. So it happened to me the very first meeting we had. I was muted through the whole meeting. But I did not listen, but when I called in and dialed all those little numbers and they asked us to do, it will tell you, you have to do *6 to unmute yourself. So it's kind of like...
And that's good, but at the start of this, it said that you put me on mute and I would have to wait until the host, because the host has veto power over that. So when the host puts you on mute, you can punch all the buttons you want. You're not going to get unmuted until the host takes you off of mute. Okay? I had already called in and was connected, and then you put me on mute, and I was left there until just now when the host took me back off mute.
Okay. So I didn't put you on mute, Donald. I didn't even realize you were on the call until now. I did see a phone number just pop up that somebody entered into the room and I allowed someone in. I don't know if that was you because I don't recognize the telephone numbers. So maybe you were waiting outside the room. I don't know. were you on the call and able to hear everything up to this point?
Nothing. Okay, I called in and was connected, and then it said the host puts you on mute, and you have to wait until the host unmutes you.
Okay.
And the host just now unmuted me, and I don't think it just popped up just now, because I've been on this thing for 45 minutes, and so I doubt that there's some kind of a delayed response that caused it to just now pop up. I think it showed on there from the time that I called in until just now that I was waiting.
Okay. If we're gonna
do this virtual stuff, let's do it right.
I don't think anyone else is having that issue, Donald. We can certainly discuss this offline. If that's something you would like to discuss, we can go over the Zoom process. But right now, does anybody have any questions over anything that I just mentioned about the SORT application? Okay. Seeing that there are no questions about that, we will go on with the application process. So you will notice that the application that is currently online is the same application that we've had online pretty much since February 26 when this went live. There have been no changes in terms of the date. However, we did communicate to everyone, CAC and NIA officers, that the timeline for the application process has changed due to COVID. So where it says July 31st, please disregard that. That is September 4th, this Friday.
Latoya, I'm sorry to interrupt, but there is somebody that has not muted themselves. We can hear and all your jumbling around, and it's making it hard to understand, Latoya. Could you please place yourself on mute? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So in terms of basic program requirements, I think you guys are all familiar with that. There will be one applicant neighborhood selected to receive the planning and project implementation assistance for 2021. Neighborhoods without an adopted neighborhood plan or those with a neighborhood plan older than 5 years will receive priority scoring. That does not mean that that neighborhood will automatically be selected. That just means that they'll receive priority scoring if they have not been through the SORT process within the last 5 years. If no applications are received, the planning department and the neighborhood relations staff will identify three neighborhoods for consideration by the Citizens Advisory Council or by the Citizen Advisory Council. Funding priority for projects, and this is after the planning process has already taken place, will be given to infrastructure projects identified in the target area. So that's after once you enter into the planning process that we're discussing funding there. Okay, so process and procedures. As I've already mentioned, the applications are due this Friday, September 4th. Applications will be scored by the Citizens Advisory Council prior to our October 7th meeting. But the score results and everything will be communicated at that meeting on October 7th. The recommended neighborhood is proposed to the City Council, as I mentioned, that will take place November 10th. And then in 2021, the neighborhood will enter into the planning and decision-making process with the planning department. In 2022, project design and implementation and housing rehabilitation will start. And then by 2023, project implementation and construction and all housing rehabilitation will have either started or be completed. So, the next section of the application, basically to be completed by the neighborhood, is their applying organization contact information. So we won't really discuss that too much. Section two, neighborhood characteristics. It's 20 points possible. This section will be completed by the planning department after the application is submitted. So there's nothing that the neighborhoods that are applying need to do at this point. That's information that will be provided once we receive the applications this Friday. Impact and benefits. So this section is worth 40 points. I think there's someone who's still not on mute. So I'm hearing
I can hear him.
Something in the background. So impact and benefits, and we'll talk about this a little bit more as we're going through the score sheet. Again, this is 40 points possible. We're looking at what changes the neighborhood has proposed that would have the greatest impact on improving the neighborhood. We're looking at how these changes, how do they feel these changes would possibly impact or benefit the neighborhood. And then we're looking at existing features of the neighborhood that the neighborhood feels could be enhanced with the SORT program. And then there's also, we're looking at any conditions or issues that might pose potential barriers to successfully revitalizing the neighborhood. In section four, and this is the section that will actually only be worth 30 points because we have removed question nine from the application process. So that question does not have to be completed this year. Due to COVID, we removed that question from the application process. So in capacity and commitment, we're looking at the neighborhood briefly describing their organization's history, mission, and vision, what it's working towards, any goals or activities that it's currently undertaking to get to their mission and vision. And then we're looking at a list of basically community assets, resources, which could include other organizations or groups that the neighborhood is working with or involved with in terms of partnerships. So we are still looking at question 10. Sorry. And then question 11 just basically asks, does the neighborhood have a 501c3 or are they a second tier 501c3 designation organization? And that is important for us to know because neighborhoods who are either 501c3 or who have the second tier 501c3 designation have more opportunities to apply for additional funding or other grants and programs that could be supplemental to the SORT program. The whole next page, basically page 7 and 8 is the petition for support, which does not need to be completed for this application process this year. So we won't even be looking at that.
Good.
So the score sheet corresponds basically with the application. So as I mentioned, this will be an electronic process this year for a majority of you. I will be reaching out to you within the next week to talk about what's going to work best for everybody to get this back in time. So the score sheet, basically you as the reviewer would put your name here. You would put the NIA or in terms of city at large, you would put that here on the reviewer NIA or NA line. And then applicant information, this information will already be filled in for you. So whichever neighborhoods we get that apply, you will have a score sheet for each of those neighborhoods that you'll fill, that each one of those neighborhoods that you will fill out, and that information will already be provided here. So looking at neighborhood characteristics, which was that first section in the application that we talked about, the first question is going to ask, does the neighborhood have a neighborhood plan? And so the scoring is basically based on, is the plan 5 years old or less? Is the plan 6 to 9 years old? Is the plan 10 or more years old? Or do they just not have a neighborhood plan at all? So that's then basically based on those selection items, you would put then what the score is for that question. So the next one is on the neighborhood health rating. As I mentioned, both of these questions are answered by the planning department. So if the neighborhood has a primarily healthy rating, 0 points. If it's outpatient, 5, at risk, 8, intensive care, 10 points. And that's what you would put in the score section there.
I have a question while we're right there. Uh-huh. Because some of our neighborhoods have two things. Like my neighborhood is at risk and outpatient.
Right.
Do we list both of them?
So you don't list anything here. This is completed by the planning department once the application is submitted. So the planning department will determine, because they'll go by the total number of blocks in your neighborhood that are either healthy, outpatient, at risk, or intensive care. And then they will provide, you know, this neighborhood has a higher percentage of intensive care areas.
Or right. This something else I noticed this year, we do not hand you in any health maps either, because we've always had to put a health map right with it. So this year we do not.
We basically determined, this has actually been probably the second or third year that we've done this since I've been on, is that it really didn't make sense for you guys to have to provide us with information that the city already has. The planning department already has that information. So it didn't, we want you to know what your neighborhood status is, but it didn't make sense for you to provide that information when we already have it. So
thank you.
Basically for those two questions, you put in the score and then you total it here under section 2, total score. So if they had, you know, say 8 points for question 1 and 10 points for question 2, that's a total of 18 points for section 2. Are there any other questions before I move on to section 3? Okay, section 3, as I mentioned, that's worth 40 points possible. So the questions here, what we're looking at is, does the neighborhood list changes that would have a significant impact on, didn't provide an answer or doesn't meet any of this criteria? And this criteria is very specific to SORT and what the funding can be used for. So if they didn't provide an answer or it doesn't meet any of this criteria here, then the score is 0. If it's something that the changes that they list would significantly improve the neighborhood quality of life, it's a 6. If it's impact on neighborhood housing, it's an 8. And if it's public infrastructure, it's a 10. Of course, if it includes all three of those, it's automatically a 10. And so you would put that score here. How would the change impact and or benefit the neighborhood? If the answer no answer, little to no impact or benefit, maybe some impact or benefit, or impact and benefit most of the neighborhood or impact and benefit all of the neighborhood, then you would put that score here. Question number five, could positive features of the neighborhood be enhanced by SORT investment? Again, we're looking at SORT overall. And the thing to understand with SORT funding is that it primarily goes to fixing or replacing or implementing new infrastructure that the city could be responsible for coming in and doing. It doesn't mean that there aren't other partnerships and things that can be enhanced, because they can be. But basically, we're looking at, you know, what positive features of the neighborhood can be enhanced by SORT funding. So if there's no answer or little to no impact or benefit, it's zero. If it's some features could be enhanced, it's a six. If enhanced features would greatly improve the neighborhood, it's an eight. And if the enhanced features could not only greatly improve the neighborhood, but also attract private investment, then it's a 10. Potential limitations to successful revitalization of the neighborhood. It's a zero if there's no answer or there's little to no opportunity for future infrastructure improvement or private investment. It's a six if the neighborhood needs more improvements than resources available. It's an eight if some opportunities for infrastructure improvement but little need for housing rehab. And it's a 10 if there's various opportunities for both infrastructure and housing improvements, as well as opportunity for private investment. So totaling that score, basically that total score would go here in section three for impacted benefits. Again, that's up to 40 points. Are there any questions on this section for scoring?
Yes. Question three, uh-huh. Neighborhood quality of life.
Uh-huh.
What does that mean?
So neighborhood quality of life could be anything. In past projects, it's been where we've done some partnerships with parks and improves quality of life in the neighborhood, or we've done some partnerships with the schools in the area that has improved quality of life. Another thing might be something where it improves maybe ADA accessibility in the neighborhood. So just some of those types of projects would be considered just some general examples of quality of life improvements in the neighborhood.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Anything else? Okay. We will move on to section four, capacity and commitment. As I mentioned, this section will only be worth 30 points instead of the 40. So question seven, the NIA's history, mission, vision, and recent activities undertaken. Again, this just kind of goes through those various levels. If no answer is provided or it's not clearly explained or there's been no recent activities, it's a zero, excuse me. 6 points for developing and recent activities show that the NI is working toward improving the area. 8 points, established and recent activities show that the NI has already made some improvements in the area and is continuing to do so. And 10 points would be well-established and recent activities show that the NIA has already made some improvements in the area and established relationships with potential investors or partners in the area. And so that score for seven goes here in this, this box here. Question eight, the NIA has undertaken activities to gather stakeholder support. And so this is the question here where This one won't be a part of the scoring process. So question eight on the score sheet will not be a part of the scoring process. So question nine, the NIA's community assets and resources consist of, and this is basically zero if it's NIA officers only. Six, if it's NIA officers, some area residents, and one community group or other organization or institution that they that the NIA has partnered with. It's 8 points if it's NIA officers, some area residents, and more than one community group or other organization institution. And it's 10 points if it's NIA officers, some area residents, and more than one community group or other organization institution and potential investors. And so that score would go there. Does the applying NIA have a 501c3 or second tier 501c3 designation? Again, if the answer is no, that's 0 points. If the answer is yes, it's 5 points. And so section four then, total score would go at this part of the application. And then total application scores, basically going back and taking the total scores from each section of the application and putting it here at the bottom in total application score. Again, this will all be revised to fit the fact that question nine has been removed from the application.
Question eight.
Well, the application is question nine. The scoring is question eight. So this will be revised to basically support that. Are there any questions over this last section four, capacity and commitment?
Yeah, I had one regarding question 11 on the scoring, the 501c3 status, and specifically the second tier designation. Is that a reference to the CRC program?
That could be CRC. It could be Topeka Community Foundation. It could be any other organization that the NIA has a second tier designation where they can apply for other grants or other resource opportunities through that entity.
Some sort of an established relationship. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions? Okay. So as I said, this year's scoring process, I know, is going to be different for everyone. So I'm sure we may have questions and things that come up, especially after I send out the information next week. This is all a new process for us in our department too, having to do things a little differently with our meetings and how we score things and everything. So I will make myself available to anyone who's doing the scoring process and maybe need some assistance with it or has some questions as best as I possibly can. So, okay. So that's all I have on that. If nobody else has any other questions, I will turn things back over to Chair Prout.
LaToya, I did have a question. You had mentioned earlier, and I want to be sure that I've got this written down correctly, that you were looking for two more people on the scoring side.
Yes. So what that means is basically, and I'll include that in the information that I send out with the score sheets, is that I am looking for two volunteers. Of course, this excludes anybody that's applying.
Right.
Of course, anybody that's applying can't even score the applications, but it would be two volunteers that will basically look at score sheets that we receive and tally up all of the scores. That's something that we usually always have someone or two volunteers at the meeting to do that, but we'll have to actually have a meeting prior to the October 7th meeting in order for these two participants to total up the scores for those so that we can have that to share out at the October 7th meeting. I'm basically would be taking two volunteers to be able to do that. I will send out information on when we'll have a meeting. And if, you know, kind of like when we have the meeting, if it works for you, it works with your time, that's something that you want to do. I don't really have a preference one way or the other of who those two volunteers are.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. Okay.
All right, anything else for LaToya? I guess not. All right, before we adjourn, I was sent a couple of questions to ask of you guys, and please feel free to send me a response in email. These are questions that Michael, Susan, Margot, and myself can take back to the Housing Study Steering Committee and have them consider that. So question one is, what is needed in our neighborhood? So that would be from what neighborhood you live in, this is what's needed. And question two, how best can the city help neighborhoods come up with good housing recommendations? Does anybody have any questions about either of those two questions?
I think I understand what they're looking for. They're kind of broad.
They are kind of broad, but I think the specificity will come in with each individual neighborhood saying, no, we need this, or this is how the city could best help us.
Right.
So if you guys would like to answer either one of those questions, you can either email them to me or myself, Margot, Susan, or Michael, because we're all on the Housing Steering Committee. And so, or maybe it would be best if we were all included on that email. That way we all have the same questions and we can make sure that things get brought up in the steering committee. That are coming directly from the neighborhood.
I suppose one thing I can say, and I don't know if this helps to address either question, but I think there's an understanding and a respect that all of the NIAs have common challenges, but that each NI is going to have particular issues that are specific to them. And I think there's an understanding of that.
Yeah. But there may be some things that you know, like Michael, you and I's neighborhood and Susan's neighborhood, and I know Margo's in at large, so she doesn't necessarily represent a specific neighborhood, but right. Maybe there's something that another neighborhood has that or doesn't have or has a need of that none of the three of our neighborhoods have, even though we do have very, very different neighborhoods, even though we're all located in central Topeka. But maybe there's something, you know, in East Topeka or in Oakland or in North Topeka that, you know, just in central Topeka, it's not a worry.
Right.
So hopefully we get some of that information. It just gives us a little bit more insight so that we can help more.
Absolutely.
Hey, Dave, could you repeat those two questions?
Yes, absolutely. Let me get it pulled back up here on my phone. Question one is, what is needed in our neighborhood? Do I need to repeat that one more time?
Nope.
Okay.
Not for me.
Okay. Do I need to repeat that for anyone else?
Nope.
Okay. Question two, how best can the city help the neighborhoods come up with good housing recommendations? And I will repeat that one more time because it's longer. How best can the city help the neighborhoods come up with good housing recommendations?
All right, thank you.
Yep, no problem. Does anybody else have any more questions about the questions?
James, on that last point, in the second question, and I suppose it'll be discussion that'll occur, if it hasn't already occurred, at the CAC level and at the NIA level, I think it's time for us to review the SORT program. And I guess what I'm trying to say, as it specifically relates to that second question, the neighborhood plans that come out of SORT, I think it's time for us to uncouple neighborhood plans from the SORT and figure out a way then so that all of the neighborhoods then can get into that planning process. And so a question about good housing recommendations could come from going through that process, if that makes any sense.
This is Robert with Valley Park, and I don't mean to piggyback too hard onto this, but I've had some pretty thorough conversations with Susan, also a part of Valley Park, about, I guess, I hadn't said explicitly, as you had just mentioned, decoupling the planning process with SORT, but we did in brainstorm and dream about what it could look like if the city and opened up neighborhood planning processes with more neighborhoods, maybe not to the same thoroughness that maybe you would if you were in the SORT program, and maybe the neighborhoods would still need to do some legwork and homework to come to the planning department with that, but maybe this is a much wider, larger conversation, but I think it would benefit Topeka a lot if all of our neighborhoods had plans that we actually sat down with city planners and people that are qualified to know what kind of improvements that we can actually make on our neighborhoods and not just willy-nilly suggestions in line with actual things that their department is capable of. And I'll basically leave it at that.
Yes.
I think we need to figure out how to enable more people to come up with good plans that aren't just willy-nilly back of the envelope plans that are dreams that aren't in the city and the planning department. Sorry.
Yes.
Thank you, Robert.
Where do we go from there? I don't know.
Yeah, I understand that. So does anyone else have any more questions, comments, or concerns about what we've been speaking about? Because I do want to respect everyone's time. It's 7:45 now. So I would, if there are no more questions, I would like to move that we adjourn.
I second that.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. I hear a giggle. I got two eyes and a giggle.
They made me giggle now.
Oh, see, here we go. Okay, I got an eye from Susan.
Got an eye from Teresa also.
Okay, and Teresa. All opposed? Nay.
Teresa says good night.
All right. Well, everybody have a good evening. Thank you very much, and We will see you, what is that, October 7th for the sort.
Thanks.
Thank you. Good night.
Have a great night.
Thanks, staff. Thanks, James.
Good night. You're welcome. Good night.